You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Last year, Wisconsin had snowstorms, tornadoes, flooding, and for just the third time ever, a tropical depression. The National Weather Service came out with a list of the top weather events to hit the state in 2020. We'll take a look at it coming up. Now, Democrats are moving ahead with their push to remove President Trump from office 9 days before President-elect Joe Biden will be sworn in. This morning, House Dems asked for consideration of a unanimous consent bill that calls on Vice President Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove President Trump from office. A West Virginia Republican blocked it. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said she'd still bring the bill to the floor. Meanwhile, House Democrats also introduced a new article of impeachment against Trump for inciting last week's insurrection at the U.S. Capitol building. Majority Leader Steny Hoyer said there could be a vote as soon as Wednesday. Over the weekend on ABC's This Week, former New Jersey Republican governor and longtime Trump ally Chris Christie told host George Stephanopoulos he supports impeachment.
What we had was an incitement to riot at the United States Capitol. We had people killed. And to me, there's not a whole lot of question here. So, you know.
So you think it was an impeachable offense?
I said before, Jordan. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Also this weekend, Twitter permanently banned Trump out of concerns that his tweets could lead to more violence, particularly around Biden's inauguration. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think President Trump should be removed from his office this close to the end of his presidency? Do you think he should be impeached or not? Are you worried about more violence breaking out between now and Inauguration Day? What do you think of the move by Twitter to ban President Trump's personal account? What do you want to see happen next? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Tim Hagel is Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa. Tim, welcome back to the show.
Good to be with you.
Well, a lot happening last week and since. What are your thoughts on where we're at right now?
Well, there's certainly a lot going on, as you're noting all the questions that your callers could weigh in on. You know, it's hard to say. I think that we're certainly at a flashpoint to a certain extent, and then maybe more so on last Wednesday than we are right now. I think to a certain extent, some people are sort of cooling their heels at this point. Maybe it was actually a good thing. I'm not really in favor of Twitter having banned Trump, but maybe it's a good thing to the extent that he's off and he gets a chance to sort of reflect on what's going on. We don't really know what he's thinking necessarily. I think he did join Clout Hub, Parler. He may have been on there, but they got pulled from the web. So, you know, it's really hard to say. I think to a certain extent, too, that maybe there's a bit of an overreaction. Trump may have crossed the line in terms of what he was saying. I don't know that I would go so far as to say it was incitement. I think of this in terms of the advocacy of violation of the law statutes that would provide an exception to free speech sorts of things. But on the other hand, it was a very volatile situation, and most people would understand that you have to be careful in that. And certainly what the riot that we saw afterwards was a proof of that.
What do you think needs to happen when it comes to examining what happened from a security standpoint? And we had the numbers 1 through 3 people in the line of succession after the sitting president, all in the Capitol complex as the mob came in, not being screened by security, violence obviously happening there, questions about the Capitol Police, National Guard response. What format should this all be reviewed on to see what went wrong and how to prevent that in the future?
Well, to some extent, we've been getting some information along those lines in terms of, did the Capitol Police request some additional assistance from the Department of Defense, the National Guard, the Army? What was going on there? We're sort of hearing kind of conflicting stories, no surprise there. So perhaps the thing that Congress really ought to do is to dig into that a little bit and find out. Now, whether you think that it was intended, the mob that was going over, the protesters at first, which eventually became a mob in terms of what they were doing. And, you know, some of the people initially went in very peacefully. I saw some of the clips that, you know, people were walking in the rotunda between the House and the Senate, and were even staying in between the rope lines, which I thought was amusing if they were supposed to be a mob. But on the other hand, you also saw clips of people that were smashing doors and windows. And of course, the woman that was killed, the police officer that eventually died. And so things did happen at a certain point, but I don't know that it was necessarily intended of that at the first, and as people initially approached the Capitol. But given all of that, when you have a large number of people in Washington, D.C., that usually you do have additional security. And it was certainly no surprise why they were there. And if people were concerned about having that many people on hand, then there should have been additional security of one sort or another, whether it was the National Guard or additional police supplementing the Capitol Police. Again, that's something that perhaps Congress should investigate.
Now, we saw in the lead up to last Wednesday a lot of social media action calling on storming the Capitol, some calls for violence amid that. Now we're seeing reports of people saying, you know, we need armed protests at state capitals, the Washington Monument shut down by the Park Service between now and the inauguration. What would you want to hear from President Trump himself to try to dial down that at least potential for more violence between now and Inauguration Day?
Yeah, what we would like to hear is, to some extent, what he has said immediately, well, maybe not so immediately, but after the riot that occurred and the violence and the vandalism, was basically saying, look, if you're going to protest, protest peacefully. That's what he wanted. And many people, of course, not just President Trump, but many other Republican leaders came out and said, look, it needs to be peaceful. We don't condone this violence. Republicans are supposed to be the party of law and order. Maybe that message is getting through, maybe not. Of course, now that Trump is no longer on Twitter, he's not able to send out that message to his millions, tens of millions of followers the way he would normally be able to do so. To some extent, that's why it's a bad thing that Trump was banned from Twitter. But on the other hand, if the concern was he was going to say something that was further incite people, then again, that may be a concern as well. But yeah, the folks need to use the media, whether it's Trump, other media, whether it's Trump or other Republican leaders, to say, look, this needs to go peacefully. Trump said he wants to have a peaceful transmission of power or transition of power, and hopefully that will happen.
Talking to Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa, looking at the latest in the aftermath of last Wednesday at the Capitol, calls for impeachment of the president or his removal from office or his resignation. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Tim, before we bring on our callers, some people have pointed to the president and others continuing to say, hey, this election was stolen, as, you know, still maybe not inciting, but reinforcing the thing that has people angry in the first place. Do you want to see that kind of message change now?
Well, to a certain extent, it should. We've gone through the process as is appropriate and is under the laws in terms of a variety of challenges, recounts, reexaminations, court cases, and so forth. And it seems that there have been mistakes made, fraud necessarily in small measure, or counting errors, or whatever you want to, however you want to characterize it. But it seems to be the consensus for most people that there wasn't enough there to actually change the votes in any of the states, let alone enough to change the Electoral College result. And so in that sense, you have to maybe still complain about looking towards improving the system in the future, but you have to accept the results as is. And that seems to be what is lacking, at least on the part of President Trump. And certainly he's unhappy about it. But then you kind of go back, and it wasn't to the same degree, of course, but a lot of people were unhappy in 2016 or 2004 or even 2000. So people are usually unhappy if they're on the losing end of something. The question is there enough there in some way to suggest that there was something untoward, if not illegal, going on that would have changed the result? And it just doesn't seem that there was enough of that this time to have made a difference.
Let's go to our callers now. Joe is with us in Manitowoc. Joe, hi.
Hi. Hello.
Yes, what'd you want to bring up, Joe?
You know, the question, even Chris Christie is saying that he was in, what he did was impeachable. And I guess it doesn't matter how close we are to the end of his term. If he's done something impeachable, he should be out. And that's coming from a lifelong Republican who says we also need to take his pardon power away.
Joe, thanks for the call. And we've seen two Republican senators, Murkowski from Alaska, Toomey from Pennsylvania, saying they'd like to see the president out of office nowish, one way or another. Tim, what do you think?
Well, it seems a little inappropriate to try to rush through an impeachment. The last time, of course, it took a very long time. The two sides had to gather together their facts and present them and so forth. And with, what, 8-9 days left, something like that, 9 days left, it just doesn't seem that there would be enough time for an impeachment, let alone have any kind of trial in the Senate. Now, there's some talk about being able to do that after Trump's left office. I'm not sure that that would necessarily be possible. The Constitution basically provides that the idea of impeachment is to remove somebody from office. And once you're already out, you're done. Now, you mentioned the idea that, well, you know, what happens if all of a sudden Trump pardons a whole bunch of people as he's out the door? Well, presidents kind of often do that. The concern might be as to whether Trump's going to do so in ways that would be considered by many people inappropriate. So there is, I suppose, that concern. But again, you don't want to be in a position where it seemed like it's a political rush job kind of a thing, because that will just further incense his base.
We're talking about calls to remove President Trump from office, the aftermath of last week's events from the Capitol, and more with Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see the president impeached for, as the article of impeachment says, inciting the mob that stormed the Capitol last week? Is it worth trying to impeach him with just a handful of days left in his presidency? What do you think about the idea of Twitter permanently banning the president's personal account? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about an effort by congressional Democrats to remove President Trump from office. Today, House Dems moved to bring up a resolution urging the vice president to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove the president. That was blocked. Democrats also introduced a new article of impeachment. Could be a vote on that, charging Trump with inciting an insurrection. Short of that, his presidency will end on the 20th. Tim Hagel stays with us, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go back to your calls now. John is with us in Shell Lake. John, hi.
Hello.
John, hi. You're on the air. What did you want to bring up?
Well, yeah, I definitely think, well, I don't know if impeachment is the right thing because it's so close to the end anyway, but I think he should be out of there like today, because who knows what kind of lunacy he's going to come up with between now and the 20th. But I also wanted to mention, actually, I think he should be jailed, but I think that'll come after he leaves the office. But I want to mention that I think your guest, Tim Hagel, there is part of the problem with this whole thing, with people whitewashing over Trump's actions and his speeches and saying, oh, this isn't that bad. I don't think he really meant that. And he made a nice speech the day after saying that these people don't represent the country. The only reason he made that speech was to try to get his butt out of the frying pan a little bit.
John, thanks a lot for the call. Tim, John saying we shouldn't minimize the president's words and the impact they had, and John worried about what the president might do in his handful of days remaining in office.
Well, as far as that last part, in terms of what the president might do, that's something that we've already mentioned in terms of, could it be a very large number of pardons for people that others don't think should be pardoned? Could it be release of classified information? Some people are calling for certain types of information to be released in terms of these investigations of one sort or another. Could Trump all of a sudden do that? And if he were to do so beyond what would seem to be reasonable, it could certainly hurt us in terms of national security in various ways. So yes, Trump certainly could do those sorts of things. On the other hand, hopefully, and we need to get some information on this, that his closest advisors, those that are remaining since several of them quit, are hopefully advising him, okay, now is the time to tone it down. Now, maybe his speech after the riot was sort of an indication that he understood that he went too far and that he needs to make sure that his supporters aren't going to engage in violent behavior between now and the inauguration. we don't know for sure. And certainly you're getting some messages from the FBI saying that there have been some threats of various sorts. And certainly there are groups that are out there on both the left and the right that will take advantage of situations like this to create havoc of one sort or another. So we certainly have to be on guard for those sorts of things, more so now than in other times. But, again, with 8 or 9 days left, it's hard to say that you can get something quickly enough through impeachment, as I was saying, or even the 25th Amendment, which doesn't seem to be happening. Some people just suggested that Trump should resign, but I'm not sure that that's going to do much good in the 9 days that are left either, except, of course, to get him out.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to Cindy now in Appleton. Cindy, hi.
Hello. Well, I'm really disappointed they're not invoking the 25th Amendment. This man is so dangerous, and he's not smart like a fox dangerous. He is ignorant and mean-spirited dangerous, and that is the worst kind. He needs to go, he needs to be impeached, and he needs to be banned from Twitter permanently. I don't want him to ever run for president again.
Cindy, thanks a lot for the call. Let's jump on her last point there. We haven't talked too much, though. You referenced it earlier, Tim, the Twitter ban of the president. Their Twitter saying and Facebook also raising concerns that the president might incite further violence and so shutting him down from social media as a result. You touched on that earlier. You're not wild about the idea. Talk about that a little more, please.
No, I'm not wild about it, mainly because I'd like to see what his thinking is, what his thoughts are. Has he realized that he went too far, and is he pulling back, and is he being more circumspect in what he's talking about, or would he in fact do something like that? Twitter can always suspend him for short periods of time or require certain tweets to be removed, as they did in previously with even Trump and some others as well. But to ban him permanently kind of leaves us questioning, well, what is his thinking right now? How angry is he? Is he going to fly off the handle in some way, like some people believe? Or is he basically said, oh, boy, I messed up here. And so now I have to try to fix this or at least try to be quiet for the remaining time of his term. We don't know. And now Trump may pop up. As I said, I think that he's on CloudHub now. He had been on Parler. We're not sure if Parler is going to come make a reappearance. It's going to have to find some different servers since Amazon booted them off their Amazon Web Services. So we'll have to wait and see if he makes a reappearance and to what extent people want to hear what he has to say. Certainly his core supporters do, but even his enemies might want to hear what he has to say just to keep an ear on that or an eye on it. If you're reading it, you want to know what people that you don't like are saying as much as those that you do.
The president does have a press room. He could summon reporters anytime. He could do TV interviews. He does have a lot of other ways to talk to us outside of Twitter. Do you expect to see him talk through those other means anytime soon?
Probably not. He actually was pretty accessible in his presidency. He would often talk to the press as he was going to or from a helicopter to go one place or another. And so in that sense, he did field a lot of questions. But at certain times, he basically would prefer Twitter because it's a more direct route to his supporters, as opposed to being filtered through the media in various ways or the types of questions he would get in a press conference type of situation. And my guess is that he's just not going to do that too much between now and Inauguration Day, simply because of the situation that we now find ourselves in.
Talking to Tim Hagel, a political scientist at the University of Iowa, looking at all the stuff going on in our nation's capital. Back to your calls. Edward is with us in Lena, Illinois. Edward, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What'd you want to bring up?
Well, I want to bring up the fact that everything that takes place on the media here is so censored that anybody from the right doesn't have a chance to say anything. Because there's so many problems that take place. The censorship that goes ahead and takes place, even with him blocking his Twitter account and even going ahead and shutting him out of Facebook, he's the president of the United States. There's no respect at all. When we start talking about the loitering and we start talking about the riots that took place at the Capitol, that's all a bunch of bull. That was just a protest. That's what it was. It isn't anything like we've seen Black Lives Matter this whole last year with them destroying...
A police officer did die after being beaten by the crowd. I mean, it's a little different, isn't it, Edward?
Oh, you're talking about one individual, and you're talking about some people that get out of hand. No different than Antifa or anybody else that shows up with all these Black Lives Matters. And also having Kamala Harris go ahead and show up and say that they have a right to do this, and they should continue to go ahead and do it. So you want to talk about treason. That's treason.
Edward, thanks for the call. Tim, Edward expressing the views of a lot of people saying what happened at the Capitol, no different than what happened at protests over the summer.
Yeah, and that's the problem that those who don't like what happened at the Capitol have, is that a lot of the people, prominent people, Democrats and folks on the left, were reluctant to criticize what was going on in the protests that started in the summer and have basically continued. And the BLM folks will say that, look, we wanted to protest peacefully, and for the most part, that may have been true. But you also had Antifa that sort of infiltrated those protests, and often it became violent, businesses burned, vandalism, looting, and so forth. And so if that was condoned, then, you know, what's going on here? Well, the situations aren't exactly the same. And depending on what your point of view is, you can probably say, well, this one's worse than this other one, kind of a thing. Or maybe they're the same. Maybe they're different. So there's a lot to be argued there. But there's also the concern that, well, look, if you are going to be concerned about violent action, you need to be criticizing it across the board.
The intent of this one, and thanks for that call, by the way, the intent of this one, the stated intent of the crowd at the Capitol, was to overturn the election result. They wanted the vice president to step in or members of Congress to flip the election result. Does that make it a little different from the big picture perspective?
Well, I think more than anything else, what made it different was the fact that it was the Capitol, and that basically that has sort of a visual effect to it that really upset a lot of people, a lot of Republicans, too. I don't know that the sort of the mob, if you want to call it that, that went over there, that they had the specific intent to overturn an election necessarily. To a certain extent, their belief was still that the senators, Cruz and Hawley and several others that were going to object to this was still part of the process. This was something that has happened in the past. Democrats had objected to the wins by Bush and Trump in 2016. And so in that sense, it wasn't totally unusual. It got more attention this time because Trump had basically since Election Day been complaining about this and had tried everything, all those court cases and so forth, even though they were unsuccessful. And this was maybe a last ditch effort. If the goal was to go over there and just protest and hear their voices, there's nothing wrong with that. That leaders of, you know, whatever ideological stripe will often have their supporters march on the Capitol and so forth. But again, the problem here, obviously, was that at some point, some people took it upon themselves to become violent about it, storm the Capitol and break down doors, break glass and so forth. And as was indicated, a woman was killed and a police officer eventually died too. And so that makes it obviously much more serious.
Tim, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
You're very welcome.
Tim Hagel is an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. We looked at the move to impeach President Trump for his role in last week's mob at the U.S. Capitol building. Coming up, we'll take a look back at the top weather events to hit Wisconsin in 2020. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, what's on your phone's gallery from 2020? We talked to a Wisconsin photographer about 2020 in photos and ask you to tell us about a picture you took last year. Now, in any given year, Wisconsin experiences a lot of variety of weather. 2020, no exception. Snowstorms, flooding, tornadoes, heat, but a few specific events stand out. So the National Weather Service, offices that cover Wisconsin, came out with a list of the top 10 weather events of the year. They include a February storm that dropped 8 to 12 inches of snow over the middle parts of Wisconsin, severe storms in early June that brought big hail and damaging winds, record high Lake Michigan water levels. Nice summer. Tim Hubach is the warning coordination meteorologist at the National Weather Service's Milwaukee office. Tim, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, some good news, big picture, for all the bad stuff that happened in 2020. Our weather wasn't too dangerously extreme last year, was it?
Yeah, for how weird of a year it kind of was, you know, some of our main events were that it was a nice summer, you know, that people could get outside and spend some time out there hiking or whatever. And then also like a warm November. So it wasn't too extreme. So that was, you know, all things considered a good thing.
So those are two of the events you just mentioned, the actual nicer ones. When you look back at a year and try to figure out what the big weather stories are, what, I don't know, what makes something leap to your list?
Well, sometimes it's just kind of a unique situation. You know, we had the remnants of Tropical Storm Cristobal that came through here, which Only three other times have we had anything come through Wisconsin. Normally the weather patterns are such that those tropical systems go further to the east. But, you know, things like that, that are just, you know, that impact people's lives or just ended up being some sort of newsmaking type of a system.
Yeah, that was a weird one where we actually got a little bit of tropical rain in very not tropical Wisconsin.
Yeah, I had to go outside and kind of feel it a little bit because it was a nice warm rain that came down as opposed to some of the thunderstorm type rains that we get that brings a lot of cold air down with it from like 30,000 feet up. So that was kind of a unique one just to experience that. I think a lot of people thought that maybe it was going to be like a buzzsaw hurricane that was coming through, but you know, for us, it just ended up being a heavy rain producer.
Now, snow, obviously no stranger to Wisconsin. The one event that made the mark for you was a northern Wisconsin snowstorm in the Easter area in the middle of April. Take us back to that.
Yeah, actually, we got some comments from the people in the southern part of the state where it was in the 60s on Easter, and they're like, what are you talking about with having a snowstorm on your top 10 list? But we had about up to a foot of snow from basically the Eau Claire area up through kind of the northeastern part of the state. So early April is kind of a late time to get that impactful of a snowstorm. So it happened to be on Easter. So if there were people that were traveling, you know, it was kind of right at the beginning of when stuff was getting shut down for the pandemic. But for the people up there, it was fairly significant for that amount of snow that late in the season.
Talking to Tim Halbach from the National Weather Service Milwaukee office, looking at some of the big weather events of 2020. Now, June 20th, moving forward a little bit here, a lot of rain in a part of the state and a few tornadoes near Lake Winnebago. Take us back to June 20th.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird one, too, because it was more so a heavy rainfall producer that we were worried about for a few days of heavy rainfall from southwestern to northeastern part of the state. Just had a couple, didn't look like much on radar type storms that went through the Lake Winnebago, Lake Butamore area. Thankfully, they were pretty weak tornadoes, but they went out over the lake. So a lot of people got pictures of those tornadoes. And technically, if there's any kind of tornado that happens over the mainland, it's considered to be a tornado, even though it's out over the water. When it happens out over Lake Michigan or the Great Lakes, that's when we consider it to be a waterspout. But thankfully, no injuries or anything like that from those tornadoes, just kind of a photogenic type of a day along with the heavy rainfall.
And speaking of Lake Michigan, another year with really high water levels in Lake Michigan. What are we seeing there?
Yeah, so that was the combination of about 8 years of above normal to record rainfall years that we've had. And this is probably the most impactful event that we've had just because the lakes were so high and the water tables were so high everywhere across the state. So we had a couple of events. One of them ended up being kind of a bust winter storm for us in January. But we had 50 to 60 mile per hour winds that actually did a lot of damage to the Port of Milwaukee because the water levels were so high and this created the higher water levels coming right into the port there. And then there was another event that happened later in the year that impacted the Green Bay, Port of Green Bay area as well. So any of these low-lying areas that happen to be by the lake, whenever we get some sort of easterly component to the wind, was causing either some flooding or erosion of the bluffs along Lake Michigan.
And image-wise, that got pretty dramatic to look at some of the image and videos that came out of that, didn't it?
Yeah, and that we worked closely with groups like Emergency Management, Milwaukee County Emergency Management got us some drone video of the break wall and just some of the road erosion that happened from all that the water pounding against that and flooding those areas. So something you want to see. We have seen the trends with the lake levels going down just a little bit because we weren't as high above normal for precipitation in the last year, but things are still pretty high. So we're hoping that it continues to go down.
And then people in western Wisconsin may remember late June and some flooding. It wasn't the worst year we've had for flooding, I think, in recent memory, but that doesn't mean there was no flooding. What did we see?
Yeah, that was our significant flash flooding. It was just east of the Twin Cities, St. Croix County. Unfortunately, there was a fatality there. One of the most dangerous types of weather that we get is flash flooding, especially when it happens at night. Just imagine if you're driving home late from work and you're going down some back country roads that have a low spot. When there's a lot of rain coming down, it makes it hard to see. And unfortunately, a lot of drownings happen when people drive into a low spot where a road's been washed out. And that was the case with that end of June flash flooding out there. Quite a bit of rain that happened over a short period of time. That it's amazing what the power of water can do when pushing roads around. And you know, a lot of times people aren't as scared from rain because it's something that we get every other day or whatever. But that was our most impactful flash flooding event that we had there in late June.
As we wrap up, Tim, what are we watching for over the next couple of weeks, looking toward the future now here in Wisconsin?
Well, I think for a lot of people, it's just, are we going to verify that the sun still exists? it is out there. I saw it on Saturday. For this time of year, this is typically our coldest part of the year. So we've been trending good with being in the 30s like this. We are watching. There could be, you know, a little bit more activity going over the next few weeks. But really for the rest of this week, just some minor systems coming through maybe late on Thursday there that we'll have to keep an eye on. But nothing too major or any huge outbreaks of cold coming in the next week.
Tim, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Tim Halbach is the Warning Coordination Meteorologist at the National Weather Service's Milwaukee office. We talked to him about Wisconsin's top weather events of 2020. You can learn more about each of those events at WPR.org/Central Time. We've got a link there for you. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Brad Kohlberg with a story about someone who saved a life by doing his job.
When we're at work, we all have a number of roles. We can take on other jobs, wear several hats. Albert Watson is a detention officer at the Dane County Juvenile Detention Center, where he also hosts a cooking club. Here, he tells the story of the day he saved a life by taking a bit of his own advice.
I had 10 minutes left of my shift before it was time to go home. I was headed to the control room to relinquish my equipment when the timer went off. I informed my coworker, Walter, that I'd head back to the pod to check on the male youth. See, every 25 minutes, our policy is to check on every kid that's in their room. This was the kid whose mood seemed to change as the day went on. It seemed like the more people he talked to, whether it be his social worker, public defender, the police, the more emotional he became. I've been a detention officer for almost 10 years at the Dane County Juvenile Detention Center. I've been training for a lead worker position and recently became the president of the Wisconsin Juvenile Detention Association. For the past 5 years, I've facilitated a cooking group at detention. No, I have not been to culinary school. My passion for cooking started with my dad. I'm the oldest of four boys, and my dad would get us up at 6:30 a.m. just so we could eat breakfast, consisting of sausage, salt pork, homemade biscuits, eggs, and tomato gravy. Yeah, I'm country in the sugar sandwich. My dad could take some neck bones and barbecue them in the oven and make us licking our fingers shortly after engaging that dish. So when I cook with these kids, it's from the heart and with love. We made many dishes over the last 5 years, from deep-fried Twinkies and Oreos to fried chicken and waffles. We've done homemade meatloaf, five cheese macaroni, lasagna and homemade garlic bread, patty melts, paninis. We always like to celebrate other cultures. So during the month of March, giving respect to the Irish, we did corned beef and cabbage, shamrock shakes and bangers and mash, which isn't really an Irish dish, but was one of the recipes that popped up when I Googled Irish dishes. And I can't forget the Kool-Aid. Kool-Aid is special when you're locked up. I bet y'all wondering, what do the kids get when they don't earn the lunch? They get hot dogs. Hot dogs I boil for about 4 hours. All I do is keep adding water to them. These turkey franks go from looking light brown color to this pale off-white spongy Vienna sausage frank. I once added green food coloring on St. Patrick's Day. I'm a damn fool at work. Some people think it's mean or cruel. I call it get your together. I can't reward negative behavior. You can't disrespect staff or be verbally abusive and earn the lunch. You can't steal a car on Wednesday night, get locked up, and earn the special lunch on Thursday. We'll shoot for next Thursday. The point I'm trying to make is, do your job. A kid that's incarcerated has only one job, and that's to follow the program so you can get the hell up out of detention. As I entered B-Pod, I walked to a room, B3. As I opened a small window of B3, I wasn't sure if what I was seeing was real, but it was. The male youth was hanging from the side of his toilet seat. I radioed for staff to call 911 and asked for assistance in B-Pod. I then opened the door of B3 and entered. Walter had just arrived. I instructed Walter to open the first aid drawer and grab the scissors from the first aid kit. And once I had the scissors in my hand, I began cutting the part of the sheet that was wrapped around this kid's neck. The kid let out this grunt of a sound, which let me know that he just might be okay. I gently placed this kid on the floor and wrapped several blankets on him to make him as comfortable as I could. Continued to talk to him and assure him that he was going to be okay. The point I'm trying to make is that I was doing my job that day. That timer went off after 25 minutes and that kid needed to be checked. A good thing happened from doing my job, and that's what I try to teach these kids during their short stay, the Dade County Juvenile Detention Center.
Albert Watson's story came to us from the podcast Inside Stories, which features Madison storytellers and digs deeper into their lives. He's a detention officer at the Dane County Juvenile Detention Center and just finished his term as president of the Wisconsin Juvenile Detention Association. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Brad Kohlberg.
Coming up, in a year where we didn't get to see family or friends often or at all, photos help play a role in making us feel connected. We'll talk about 2020 in photos with a Wisconsin photographer coming up next on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers will deliver the annual State of the State address tomorrow night at 7. You can hear live coverage here on WPR. The address will be delivered virtually as the coronavirus pandemic continues. It'll be followed by the Republican response from State Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. That's live coverage of the State of the State address tomorrow night at 7 on Wisconsin Public Radio and at WPR.org. Now, in a year where we didn't get to see much of each other in real life, photos and video served as a stand-in for human connection. Many big media websites publish a year in photos roundup annually that serves to remind us of this year's events, big and small. Taking a look at your own gallery, you can find the story of your own year. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you find joy in seeing pictures of friends or family over the last year? Did you take a look back at pictures from previous years to remember some things you wish you could have done this year? Concerts, traveling maybe. Do you have a photo that you'd pick as your photo of the year for 2020? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Andy Adams is a Madison-based photographer, curator, and writer. He directs FLAC Photo Projects, a website to connect, promote, and share the work of other photographers. Andy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Well, as a photographer, did 2020 change the way your work worked or felt?
You know, it didn't actually change the way that I made pictures, but something that I realized in, especially as I was looking back on the year in review, is that the kinds of things that I photographed changed, based on the constraints from the coronavirus.
What changes did you see?
Well, I was just kind of looking at these pictures, and I like to walk, I like to hike, I like to do outdoor stuff. We've got so much beautiful landscape here in Wisconsin to travel in, and I realized that I was out there by myself and with my wife and nobody else. So you see these pictures of bare open landscapes, and you see pictures oftentimes of me and Kristen. I sort of make her stand in the path in front of me. Or another thing I found myself doing a lot of was photographing food and also photographing interiors of my house. And, you know, in retrospect, it's because these are the things that we did. We got to go hiking together and we basically hunkered down and we hung out here at the house. And I ended up kind of realizing that this, you know, the four walls of the rooms that we spend our time in are actually more interesting than I might have realized otherwise.
Yeah, I've heard we had Rick Steves on the show talking about, you know, since he couldn't travel, he looked at his local environment in a new way. Did you
Absolutely.
Have some of that with the photography?
Oh, yeah. I live downtown here in Madison, and I take walks all around the neighborhood. And so lots of the pictures that I made this year are of just lots of little idiosyncratic parts of, the place that I live, the way that the leaves look on the sidewalk, maybe alleys and backsides of houses, or, you know, the angles of the way that the light falls on the fence. Really simple observational stuff like that. You know, the truth is that it's all beautiful if you can just sort of tune your eye to see it that way. And it I guess it's a reminder that the world is really interesting wherever you are if you just know how to look.
Now, even for people who aren't pros, we have these cameras now that make it easy and convenient to take pictures. Do you think like making these visual records can help us make sense of what's happening in our lives, maybe especially in a weird year like 2020?
Absolutely. You know, pretty much every picture that I make with my phone, which means that it's connected to the internet, which means that it's connected to my Instagram feed. So it's not just making the pictures that I told you about. It's oftentimes immediately sharing those pictures either in text with my sisters down in Florida or with friends across town that I haven't seen face to face. And of course, everyone's doing the same thing on their own social media. So, you know, in a way, these pictures become a storytelling vehicle for communicating who we are and what we've done. And I do really think that in 2020, photography, specifically social media-based photography, was probably a critical way to stay in touch with people that we, I think, really miss.
Did you see us becoming more creative in the ways we use our photos to tell stories and connect with each other?
I'm not sure that I expected that, but you know, the truth is that creativity comes from constraints. We see that in all forms of art and actually in all kinds of situations in our lives. So it makes complete sense, I suppose, that, you know, taking out a couple of things that we could ordinarily count on forced us to think differently and to see the world through a new lens and to find a different way to connect with each other.
Talking to Andy Adams, Madison-based photographer, about the year in photography 2020, how a strange year maybe changed the way we took and shared our images over the course of the year. Andy, I know you think about not just taking pictures, but sharing them and kind of curating them. What would you recommend for people, you know, the amateurs out there who maybe have phones packed with pictures of, you know, how to go back and make sense and, I don't know, archive whatever they want to do with their pictures?
Yeah, you know, if folks aren't already using a service like Flickr or Google Photos, I would recommend looking into something like that. I use Google Photos, which is connected to my Google account where I use my Gmail and my calendar. And it's a really slick, simple, affordable application for not only tracking and organizing into albums and making notes and sharing pictures that you make, but it becomes a really, really helpful tool for being able to look back and also to search and find pictures that you might have made. You know, what I found, especially in 2020, was that in addition to making, you know, pretty pictures for myself, I was really using photography more than I ever have as a sketch pad, as a notebook to, you know, just to make a picture of something that I wanted to remember. And so to use an app like that makes it even easier to retrieve these things after the fact.
Now, if people have had a New Year's resolution to become better photographers in 2021, let's take somebody who's terrible at taking pictures like me. You know, phones have made it easier for me to take bad pictures faster. Do you have a tip or two to make us have pictures we'll feel a little bit more proud of?
Yeah, well, I say this all the time. I truly believe that thinking about photography every day is good for you. I personally think that it makes me happier. I personally think that it makes me feel more creative. So a really simple thing, probably an obvious thing, but one that I think that not enough of us do is just to pull your camera out and make a picture or two every single day. You know, Dorothea Lange once said, the great FSA photographer once said that photography is a way to learn how to see without having a camera. And so just keeping that camera in your pocket, which it already is, pulling it out and thinking about how to make a picture with it every single day is probably the best way to train your eye and just, you know, to get more comfortable behind the lens.
Does it make us better photographers to share those photos online, even if they're not perfectly composed?
I don't know if it makes you a better photographer, but, you know, in the end, it's all about having fun and it's all about communicating with people that you care about. So, you know, sure, if you want to get better, practice every day. But if you just want to be able to communicate with friends, family, colleagues, then by all means, just do it a little bit every day.
Briefly, as we wrap up, Andy, as a photographer, do you have 2021 goals?
I think it's probably just to try to stay creative, not to get too bogged down by some of the things that we're challenged with right now. And personally, I find that looking at pictures, Instagram's my app of choice, looking at pictures by photographers from around the world, as well as from friends and people here in my local community, is just one of the best ways to stay inspired.
Andy, thanks a lot for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Take care.
You too. That's Andy Adams, Madison-based photographer, curator, and writer. He directs FLAC Photo Projects, a website to connect, promote, and share the work of other photographers. If you have a photo from 2020 to share, maybe one that you're particularly proud of that really came together well for you, you could share it with us over on the Ideas Network Facebook page.